Catskill Town Hall for local law 3 of 2025, amending the code of the town of Catskill to include a new chapter for the good cause eviction law. Proposed amendments to the code of townwide and applying all zones. The board will welcome public comment at that time and in writing. The proposed amendment is available for review on the town website and at the town clerk's office, 439 Main Street, Catskill, New York, by order of the Catskill Town Board. Elizabeth is our town clerk.
Okay, thank you, Liz. So before we start, I just want to, again, appreciate everybody coming out tonight. When we call upon you to speak, please state your name, and we're going to limit public comment to 3 minutes per person. And I ask that everybody be respectful, no interrupting people, no screaming, no yelling, no waving of hands. We're here to have casual conversations. Okay, with that, I'll open it up to public comment. Anybody like to start? Joe first, or Elliot?
No, I'm going first.
Okay, Elliot, you're up first.
Hi, everyone. My name is Elliot Matos. I live here in the village, but I am very active throughout all of Greene County. I am also the director of operations for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. I just want to let the board know and the audience, the town people, that landlords under good cause, landlords can raise rent to a reasonable amount, which is either 10% of the consumer 10% or the consumer price index of 5%, which is lower than, which is usually lower, but it's the reasonable amount that a landlord raises rent throughout Greene County is around 8 to 8.5%. So the landlord still can raise rent. The landlords cannot double or triple a tenant's rent. And that's important right now as we're facing a housing crisis. Landlords can evict tenants. People think that they can't, but they can. They have to have a good cause, failure to rent, selling drugs out of the apartment, causing a nuisance. These are reasons that a landlord can evict a tenant. They cannot evict a tenant simply because they don't want to renew their lease. This is another issue that we're facing, especially when we have a lot of corporations coming in from Texas and California buying homes in Greene County, not ever stepping foot in Greene County and knowing our culture here. So this is important. This is what protects us. Landlords, I just wanted to say also that there are exemptions from the, for good cause eviction, and that's luxury rentals. We do suggest that the board, consider a 300% threshold, which would, make any unit over 2,500 exempt, and small landlords, we really believe that small landlords should be anyone who owns one or more dwelling, and that's basically because of these LLCs, again, from California and Texas, who have really been putting a lot of investment in the, up and down the Hudson Valley without ever stepping foot in it, and they're totally changing the culture of here, not knowing, pushing people out. So that's what I wanted to say, and thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Elliot. Next, Mr. Rizzo.
Thank you. My name is Joe Rizzo. I'm a resident of the village of Catskill, not the town of Catskill. But I would like the board to consider some language changes in this resolution, which is authorized under the local law. And excuse me if I take my glasses off. That happens when you get older. The resolution as written only allows to mean any landlord who owns no more than one unit, and that is not correct. It can be no more than 10 units. So I would ask the board to consider what is the meaning of 1 or 10 or 5 or 6 and what effect that would have on the law. The Village of Catskill entered their resolution, and they only allow one owner. The law also allows you to do certain extensions in the law. You can make some changes to the law. I would ask that the town attorney have the opportunity to look at the law and discuss the law with the board. For you to know, this is from the Federal Fair Market Rent And in Greene County, and this is based on our zip code, a one-bedroom apartment, the rent, normal rent, is over $1,000, $1,064. If it's a two-bedroom, it's $1,254. If it's a three-bedroom, it's $1,720. And if it's a four-bedroom apartment, it's $1,875. And they consider that high in this area. So just so that you know that, that those rents are high compared to other areas. And you can, if you want an exemption, you're going to have to go pretty high in order for you to get an exemption. For a one-room apartment, it's probably around over $2,000. For a two-bedroom, I'm sorry, for an efficiency, $2,000, one-bedroom, $3,000, two-bedroom, $4,000, it goes on. And the exemption is anything above 275% of the market value. And I'm not sure how many apartments in Greene County are going to be able to reach that amount of money and also to be able to rent it. You know, it's going to rent somebody at that amount. But I am asking, I'm asking that the board...
Your time is up.
I'm asking the board to take a look at the law. Do not pass it tonight, because there are certain exemptions that you can put in the law that would allow... it to be a strong law. And I also would like to ask the board to continue the public hearing. If there are nobody here who is an owner of a rental property, because if you looked at what the village did, the village had a few people who were against the law. So you need to look at both sides. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Next. Yes, please state your name.
Patty Fitzgerald. I live in Leeds. I do own three properties, so I did some research and looked at legal forums where attorneys were discussing some aspects of the legislation, as well as property owners. And it seemed the overarching aspect was that there's a lot of ambiguity, and there are a lot of things that are written that allow for some subjective ruling. And so it was a little tricky for me to understand if, for example, I wanted to, three properties right next to each other, so that I would not be considered someone that has a rental on the dwelling, because I know that would have an exemption. But the idea that they're, like as you stated, you can't be evicted just because. So if I decided I wanted to try being a landlord of an adjoining property, and it just wasn't working out what I expected, that could be challenged if I wanted to terminate the lease. And then again, I'd have to show good cause. And my good cause might simply be that I just don't want to go in this direction, and that can be tied up in court. There's still, attorney's fees, etc. And it does seem that New York is one of the most liberal states in terms of tenants' rights. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, that is a good thing, but it seems that this legislation is still in its infancy stage, and for the town of Catskill, I don't think we have a tremendous amount of rental properties. I don't see this being a huge issue, so it might be good to let it marinate for a couple of years and see the kinds of cases that are coming out of this, because I agree that tenant protection is important, but I think it seems we're going away from property owner protection as well, so that's kind of my position on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. Please stay down. State your name.
Hi. I'm Steph Zimmerman, and I live in the town of Catskill off of Old Kings Road. Thank you for holding this hearing from folks. So I support the passing of a strong version of Good Cause. I'm currently a renter. I'm paying the most of rent that I've ever paid. I pay over a third of my income on rent, which qualifies me, someone who works full-time, is rent-burdened. And I'm not alone. Greene County's Workforce Housing Attainability Report in 2023 describes that 48% of renters were cost-burdened by housing in 2021. The average Greene County renter needs at least a job and a half to afford fair market housing. I love living in Catskill, and I'm committed to making this area a place where I and others can live and live well. Another thing, the expense, I do love the place that I'm renting out, and I have a good relationship with my landlord. He's kind, he's responsive when I have requests. However, that doesn't negate the fact that I'm in a precarious situation, as so many renters are in the town of Catskill. I'm entirely dependent on my landlord's goodwill. As Elliot said, if a landlord decides to raise rent by 50% or more, as landlords we've seen have been doing, my landlord could do that, and I would have no choice but to move out and try to find a new place in a region where there's very little affordable housing. So as you can imagine, this makes it really difficult to plan ahead. When my lease is up for renewal each year, I have no legal assurance about what my rent will be for the upcoming year. And Good Cause would provide that clarity, would provide some like set boundaries for landlords and for tenants to know like what they can charge and what the rent would be in the future. It would give the ability to financially plan ahead and have peace of mind that if my rent is raised, it would be within clear preset limits. And I'm not for a law that makes it harder for responsible landlords to rent out spaces in places they own. We need all the housing we can get in the region, especially from really like well-intentioned landlords committed to the area. Good Cause would provide clarity to the landlords and would enable strong landlord-tenant relationships. This law is not anti-landlord. And I think most of what we saw in the village hearings, where it was kind of people opposing the law, often didn't know the specifics of the law. And after kind of there was kind of a conversation about what the actual specifics are, most of the landlords were like, oh, that's fine. We actually like saw a landlord leave in the middle of a meeting because he was like, oh, that's fine. Didn't feel like he needed to stay to kind of like protest the law. And it would not prevent, like as Ellie was saying, it would not prevent landlords from evicting tenants who do not follow the terms of their lease. And it doesn't, like, if you want to take your house off the market, it doesn't prevent you from doing that. You're free to do that. And it would still provide landlords with more than enough financial incentive to rent out their space. Providing housing to everyone who wants to live in Catskill is a huge issue that will take more than Good Cause to tackle. But Good Cause is a helpful start, and it has already been enacted in many villages and towns throughout the region. This isn't like something just thought of yesterday. It's in Paso Robles, and Albany, and Kingston, and Nyack, so many more places. So I encourage the town board to vote to pass the strongest version of Good Cause, because without the certain exemptions, as Elliot was talking about, the law's kind of becomes almost like pointless to pass because it doesn't apply to most of the rental properties. So setting the small landlord definition at one property makes it so landlords can't kind of get around the law with an LLC loophole that if it's set anything above one, it's very easy to do. And if the luxury tax exemption isn't set high enough, it also makes it so a lot of rentals can just be exempt. And it's kind of almost like pointless to pass in the first place. So, and if you need more information about this, there's so many people that have done a ton of research and can kind of, you know, provide more information to you or anybody else that wants more kind of info about the law. Okay. So, thank you.
All right, thank you. Anybody else? Yes, sir, stand up, state your name, please.
Hi, I'm Dylan Nowick, and I just wanted to echo support and solidarity of passing a strong Good Cause eviction law. As Elliot's mentioned, eviction is still perfectly possible within reasonable bounds, but it does protect renters. We're in a housing crisis right now, and I do think that the need for housing supersedes any minor inconvenience that might be incurred by a landlord just simply deciding it wasn't working out without a just reason. So, yeah, I just support a strong version of the law. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Yes, ma'am. Stand up. Please state your name.
Hi, my name is Eliza Dichter. I live in Kiskatong. I used to live in Powellville. Thank you for having this hearing. Apologies, because I know the board has heard me speak about this before, so apologies for some repetition, but for the rest of the folks, I'm a homeowner, and I am not a renter. And I started hearing about this and got interested in it because I'm concerned and care about the community and, you know, this idea of, like, property safety. I live in a block that has almost no residents in it anymore. It's just Airbnbs and, you know, I guess vacation house that's sitting to be sold. I don't really even know. So for me, like, safety and community kind of all go together, and having residents and a mixed income residents with people who are building a life here, it matters. And my understanding of the rules and why I support the strong version of the rules is, you know, similar as other folks are saying, it provides clarity. It's not about good landlords, it's about folks who are trying to take advantage of and profit off the situation, or who are exploiting folks. I'm not a renter, my friends are renters, folks I've made friends with who work in local places are renters, and my kids' friends are in rental families. And I don't know if any of you ever heard, like, a kid conversation where I've heard a couple of these, a kid says, I can't make plans, I don't know what school I'm going to go to, because we're not sure and we're going to stay at home. And that, you know, even though it's not my rent that's being affected, it's my life, it's my community, it's who's living in the neighborhood, it's having residents and having a town that's for the residents. So this just seems like a kind of a floor of a place to try to start to, you know, create some rules about who's going to come here and what how they think of our area. 25 years plus ago, when I moved to the town, I was a renter. I lived in a property with multiple rentals. New people after a few years bought the property, and they kept all the tenants because they were moving in. They were not flying by and seeing something that they could then jack up and put on the market in different ways. That wasn't what they were about. I respect folks who are making a business. This seems like there's all kinds of room for folks to have property ownership or property management as part of their business, providing homes for other people. And so, for me, as somebody who lives in the area, I know this doesn't quite protect our mobile home tenants yet. It doesn't deal with the Airbnb situation. There are other things that may be affecting some of us, but it does say that, like, this town is about the residents, and we want to make sure that our residents can build lives here and build lives together. And so I'm really, really grateful that you all are considering this, and that folks are open to having a conversation if they have concerns. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Yep. Stand up, state your name, please.
Hello, my name is Adrian Fernandez. I live in the village of Catskill, and so I'm not speaking from the perspective of someone who lives in the town per se, but I know lots of people in the town, and I also do food deliveries for the food pantry in the town, and I've been kind of having discussions with people about this bill for a long time, and leading up to us trying to get it passed in the village, I had people come up to me frequently, every day, every other day, telling me that if this something like this doesn't come into fruition, they're going to have to leave town. These are, like, people who've lived here for dozens of years, if not their whole lives. They're being forced into a situation where they just have to leave. And so it's been a huge stress also for delivering food, because I talk to people who are really housing insecure. They don't have a lot of money, so they can't groceries, so also they're being put in housing situations where they don't really have any kind of, like, secure kind of contract with the landlord, because that kind of loosey-goosey situation enables them to have a cheaper rent. And then also, you know, when something's not up to code, they're going to just get kicked out. Or when something else doesn't go the way, the reason why they have a loosey-goosey contract and they're paying low rent is because there's reasons why they shouldn't have been in that place in the first place. And so this kind of, like, solidifies the renter-landlord contract as a business deal. It already is a business deal, but this is making it firmer. It outlines that, you know, if you want to enter into housing as a way to make money, you have to be serious about it, because it's not just something you can dabble in, because now your investment for how you're getting money is somebody's life. You know, like, somebody's living there, their kids go to school, they have to go to work, and if you decide it's not for you, it's quick decision for you, maybe, even if it takes a while to get them to leave, but that person, their life is upended. I mean, like, what if you guys just had to, like, move out of your house because something wasn't working out with whoever, what the bank was like, we don't want you to own this house anymore. It's not something you can just enter into lightly, and I think that's kind of more so what this is saying. It doesn't make sure nothing can happen to a tenant, and it doesn't make sure that anything can happen to a landlord, but it does solidify what the boundaries of the relationship between them and the tenant are, so that it's a serious business deal. And so, because of that, if you think people who've lived here for dozens of years leaving is worth you having more flexibility to do what you want with your tenants, I don't think that's a fair deal, and that's why I'm speaking.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Yes.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Ibarra. I'm a resident of Pierrenville. This is going to be my 9th summer living here. I'm a tenant, so I rent with my husband, Dylan. And we have a good relationship with our landlord, but as a tenant, I would like you guys to pass good cause eviction and a strong version, because being a tenant is so precarious. We're this part of our lives where we're thinking about having a family, we want to stay here, we love Catskill, but it's, as a tenant, it's like anything could really happen and we're not totally in the position of feeling ready to enter the real estate market at this point. That's a little bit overwhelming. So I just want you all to consider, you know, folks who are trying to build their lives here, as well as people who have been here their whole life, and just preserving the community is so important. And I think that Good Cause is a really good example of that. And it's an opportunity for us all to kind of come together and be like, this is our priorities and our values as a town. And I think it would just be really awesome if you could consider passing it.
Okay, thank you. I saw another hand up there. Yes, Beth.
Hi, I'm Erin. You know me, I live in the village. I also support Good Cause passing in the strongest version of the law. I just want to remind us that like having safe and secure housing is what allows us to be amazing members of the community. It gives us the confidence to go out and try new things and spend money and not worry about what will happen next year. And I just know that feeling of being like, I'm coming up on my lease, like, should I, you know, get ready to move, or should I really get comfy? And I just think that like safe and secure housing is like the basic human right. And it's like what we need to thrive. Like if you do not know where you are going to live, if you do not know if you are gonna move out of town, like it's hard to put down roots, it's hard to make friends, it's hard to invest in the community, get involved. Like it is just such a domino effect. And I also think without Good Cause and without these protections, there really is no guarantee that like underprivileged people will not be taken advantage of, because if you live in a place that is not safe or that has a mold problem or that needs repairs, you're scared to complain to your landlord. Like, I feel that way, and I think that it creates this like very slippery slope where people are scared of their landlord, and that is not a good dynamic at all. And I'm not saying that all landlords are bad by any means. I agree, this is not an anti-landlord law. But there needs to be some assurance that you're not just gonna be kicked out of your life. And I really support the passing of this law. I think that it's just like, we wanna be a community that is kind. We wanna be a community that cares about our residents. And like, I obviously know there is nuances to everything, but I think this is a really good step in saying that like, we are doing the kind thing, and we are really taking all of these perspectives to heart. And yeah, thanks for having us town hall.
Thank you. Hang on, Elliot. Anybody else? Going once, going twice, Elliot.
Okay, I'm sorry, I know that I already spoke, but I did want to address the landlord who spoke earlier. I just wanted to make this, that landlords can evict tenants for failure to pay rent, causing a nuisance, illegal activity within the dwelling, interfering with the comfort and safety of the landlord and other tenants. If the owner wants to use the dwelling themselves, give it to a family member, tear it down, or remove it from the market for any reason. So I just want to let you know that those are the reasons that...
But you would still have to go to court.
No, you would not
have to... You can still challenge it based on Good Cause, is what I'm saying. I just don't see this scourge of you know, these awful landlords who are just evicting. I mean, if you buy a rental property, you want income. And so I guess it's like before putting more legislation in, let's see all of the circumstances where so many residents or renters in Green County are being left homeless. I don't see that. And I happen to be, like, I just think New York is constantly another restriction, another layer of bureaucracy. And I wholly agree with the context of what you guys are saying, which is, you know, housing security, et cetera. But it's, you know, where is the conversation about some of the problems that landlords face with difficult tenants? That my brother has been doing property management for years. You know, during COVID, landlords or homeowners were not allowed to evict people, whether the person was working or not. So it just seems like there's constantly another layer of legislation that is restricting. I'm a capitalist, I'm a free market person, so, you know, but I just don't see where all of these people are being left homeless by ruthless landlords in the town of Catskill. There's just a little bit of space between, you know.
Homelessness has risen in Greene County. I'll let you know that right now.
I just feel like this is not that conversation.
You just mentioned that, so I just was letting you know homelessness has risen.
100%. That's a social issue, and this is more bureaucracy for a business owner or a property owner, or you know, just let it sit. Okay. Let it sit for a year or two and see the kind of problems that it's solving. And then if it's like, hey, we could use that in Greene County, but I'm not aware of this horrible problem that's happening, and it seems like the burden is once again.
Well, because you're not aware of it does not mean that it's not happening, is what I'm saying.
I know, but then let's have evidence. Like, just let's have evidence. This has only been,
okay,
you know, a possibility. All right.
Thank you both. Anybody else, ma'am?
Is it possible to speak a second time?
Yes. Yep.
I just wanted to respond to the concern, because I hear you about the idea of like more bureaucracy and courts. My understanding of that is that right now people can bring you to court and you don't have as clear of a line of defense as a landlord, because they can still bring you to court. Some folks might want more bureaucracy, like there's something else to regulate it, or there's somebody who's going to come in and check on this. If even one person goes homeless, that's really sad, so I don't know what the number has to be, whatever. But there isn't actually going to be somebody coming in and checking on landlords. There isn't bureaucracy at it. What there is that the courts that there already exist, that they would already bring you to if they were so minded to bring you to court, they can still bring you to court. And the difference is now you actually have a list of things to say, well, actually, you were a nuisance. Oh, well, actually, you know, I'm taking it, whatever you're, you know, whatever the thing is. So it isn't something that adds additional claims mechanisms in courts. It's actually, my understanding is, it clarifies what would happen once somebody, if they decide to bring somebody to housing court. But it isn't necessarily going to go in and stop that one person from becoming homeless. It might just prevent that some exploitative landlord, which it sounds like, you know, you're not trying to talk about doing at all, some exploitative landlord from being more likely to do that. But just to clarify that, I don't think it's bureaucracy or adding a layer of court. It's actually adding the clarity that you would have for your defense in court.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Rizzo.
You know, under the Constitution, you know, we have a right to do a lot of things. A property owner has rights. A tenant has rights. And when you look at this law that is proposed, in a lot of cases, it's probably a good law. People may need it. But when you pass that law, you as a board need to be assured that you're not impinging on people's rights, whether they're the tenant's rights or the owner's rights, that you do your due diligence when you look at that law to make sure that it's written properly, that whatever exceptions you can do to the law, are they good or are they bad? And if you are to change something, change it with the premise in mind that we all have rights, whether we're a tenant or we're an owner. And that is a burden that has to be put on you, and that's why I ask that you take a hard look at the law, listen to what we all have to say, and if it's important and it is firm and just, then obviously you should make the right decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. So, given everything that was said tonight, I would like to keep the public hearing open if the board is for that, to revisit the local law, work with Ted. We can continue it at our May 21st meeting.
Yeah, I had a couple points I wanted to bring up in some of my research I've done. Very interesting study done by NYU, actually, on the law. And some of the cons that came out of their study, one would be a reduction in availability because of the law, which worries me in an already reduced market. Two, my bullet points here, it creates a much longer term challenge, including development of new properties and the expense of building new housing, which is another thing from the NYU article that I took out of it. And I did take the time over the last couple weeks. I interviewed a couple landlords that I consider. One of them actually hasn't raised his rents in 5 years, and he said he'd probably turn to more doing more Airbnbs because it's much more lucrative. And speaking to the justices, what I found is a lot of these places where this passes, they have housing courts. Town of Catskill does not have a housing court. Our entire justice system is run by two part-time judges. So the court log could put way out any type of process for an eviction. So even if there was a good cause to evict, the time it takes to get in front of the judge could be months away. Because we don't have a specific housing court like some of these bigger municipalities do. So there's a couple of things I found. Do I believe renters and we need protections? Yes. Do I think the way the state wrote the law doesn't have any teeth? Yes, I think we would have to do a better job with it. But I agree with Patrick and the rest of the board that we should keep this open and talk to the town attorney to see what we can really come up with. And my biggest concern is a reduction in availability.
Any other board comment?
I just, it's always been my understanding that it's very difficult to evict somebody, period. It could take up to 3 months, I think. Sheriff's Department used to say that. I don't know if that's still true or not. And depending on the circumstances, it could be even longer. So I don't think... If I was the landlord and I was renting to Jared, I don't think I could say, here's a new lease, the rent's going up, and he can't afford it. I don't think he has to, I don't think there's any mechanism to make him leave before 90 days as it is, legally. Is that true?
Well, it takes a while. You have to serve notice. You know, and you have to serve notice, then so many days has to go by before you can get into court. And then once you're in court, the judges are, you know, they're human beings like everybody else. So if the people have kids or if the people are old or whatever, they tend to, you know, give them a couple extra months. So you could, you know, if you're a landlord and you haven't gotten paid, it's possible 3, 4, 5 months goes by, and then when you're done, and then when the person leaves, then you're not going to get your rent. I mean, that's a common, you know, that's a common occurrence.
Okay. Anybody else?
Motion to keep the public hearing open.
Second.
Motion by Brian, or Jared, second by Brian. All in favor?
I think somebody
motion
in the back.
Carried. Yep, I'll get to him.
I just had a clarification question, because like, I feel like I'm just confused why you guys think this would make like cases against landlords more frequent. Like, what about it would make it more frequent? It would just...
Well, actually, in interviewing the justices, they have seen an uptick in people coming to court and not understanding good cause and causing more court cases.
Seems like that's an education issue.
It still is, they still come to the court and then they have to have their thing and the judge has to dismiss it.
Okay. I also would like to hear eventually the pros of the NYU article.
Oh, I'm just bringing up some, like I said, I understand tenants and landowner rights. My biggest fear in a community that already has a housing crisis is this causing an even larger reduction in availability.
Totally. Definitely not what any of us want.
Okay, we are done with that portion.
Jared, would you mind sharing the article?
It's an NYU article. It's if you shoot me an email, I can email it to whoever
okay.
wants it. It's,
thank you.
I think Elliot found it already.
No, I didn't.
Oh.
I took notes about what you said.
Okay, we're going to open it back up to public comment later in the meeting if you want to make a comment, but we have another public hearing to go into. So we have another public hearing, Cell Tower Local Law. Liz, can you please read the public notice?
Please take notice that Catskill Town Board will hold a public hearing for Local Law 4 of 2025, amending the code of the town of Catskill on Tuesday, May 6, 2025 at 6:30 p.m. Catskill Town Hall, 439 Main Street, Catskill, New York, proposed changes to the town code include changes to solar energy use, subdivision, and zoning chapters. New chapter on personal wireless facilities is proposed. Proposed amendments to the code are townwide and apply to all zones. The board will welcome public comment at that time and in writing. The proposed code amendments are available for review on the town website and at the town clerk's office, 439 Main Street, Catskill, New York, 5 and Catskill Town Board, Elizabeth is at the town.
All right. Ted or Adam, do you want to just give like a high level overview of this?
Why don't we start with the personal wireless law?
Yep.
Then Adam, we don't have to keep Adam for the rest
Got
of
it.
The night.
Makes sense.
He'll go first.
Yeah, so thank you, members of the board. Thank you for having me here. It's my first town board. I've definitely been here with Teresa.
Oh, just Adam. This is Adam. He's an engineer with a Delaware firm. He represents the town of Catskill.
And I helped Ted put this law together. This law would create what's called an overlay zone. So it would encompass the moderate density, highway commercial, industrial, and rural agricultural zones. It would also encompass existing personal wireless service facilities as defined herein, so existing towers. So that's where, in the town, the zoning districts where new towers and co-locations would be allowed. The law, like many laws regulating wireless telecommunications facilities, requires a demonstration of need for the facility. It requires, in fact, that the proposing entity have a binding agreement with a carrier, so you wouldn't build a tower on spec. The need is related also to the height. It does set up a maximum height of these facilities of 200 feet, but that would also need to be substantiated by an engineering analysis of the radio frequency propagation maps and coverage maps and modeling and that kind of stuff. So, you know, if they just want a 200-foot tower, but they don't have the data to support it, you know, a 200-foot tower wouldn't necessarily be approved, right? There are the 200-foot height is set up, it's the maximum that's allowed for the FAA gets involved and requires lighting for navigation. A visual impact assessment would be required. You know, that's one of the biggest, concerns with these facilities is their visual impact, their impact on property values, their impact on neighborhood community character. So there's a variety of provisions in here, whether it's located on an existing structure, like a silo or a water tower or a church spire, or whether it's a new structure, such as, a monopole or, you often will see camouflage, stealth towers put inside flagpoles, franken trees, towers made to look like trees. So there are provisions in here to allow the planning board to address, with a variety of strategies, those potential impacts. There's other provisions related to, glare and painting and what the equipment at the ground level looks like. There's another provision which is common to these regulations and is allowed for municipalities is, you know, preference for co-location. So as part of the application, there's requirements in here that the entity making application has to study existing structures that on which they could put these facilities, as a first measure, as a strong preference. That's the language from the law. A little bit of the context of this, if you're not familiar, the federal government has essentially preempted the portions of the field of regulations of these facilities, right? So you can't really regulate radio frequency emissions. The best that municipalities can do is require that the applicant provide a copy of their FCC license for the equipment. This law also, once it's in operation, the tower must be monitored, I believe it's annually, for radio frequency emission in addition to structural soundness to ensure ongoing compliance with those FCC regs. The FCC, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, provided the FCC some authority to regulate in this domain. And so they've, the TCA sets up timeframes and other standards like a written decision and this kind of thing that provide guide rails for local land use boards to make decisions. What it also does is it sets up a path for applicants to go directly to federal court if they, believe they have a claim against the town. One of the key regulations that the FCC has put in is this shot clock. So basically, I think it's 160 days when they submit to the town. Usually, it's an attorney making application on behalf of these carriers. So it's a formal, it's a complete application, right? So the date of that thing starts the shot clock, and there's a presumption anything beyond that is unreasonable delay, in view of the regulations. So, there is still local control over the height, the aesthetics, the location of these facilities, for example, but there are some things that the town can't touch, and this law is sort of consistent with that. So I think that's kind of the high level. Maybe a little bit more than high level, but I think one other thing, there are annual inspections required. It also requires a security be provided at the outset, prior to issuance of a building permit, to secure the performance of the removal of the tower should it be abandoned. I think abandonment is defined basically as half a year without having any carrier service operating on it.
I was just going to ask if there was a decommission plan.
There's a security,
right?
Yeah.
Is that inspection yearly, every 6 months, or is it
annual?
Yeah.
Annually at the applicant's expense for structural integrity, copy transmitted to the building inspector, and then annual inspections by a qualified RF engineer.
Should we have an actual dollar amount in there for the escrow accounts? Because as time goes on and the projects expand, it could surpass that $7,500.
Should it be a percentage of the cost of the project?
The application fees and the escrow, it depends a lot on the applicant, whether they're responsive. Our fees, fees go up, right? Yep. That increases. So yeah, regulatory requirements increase. State stormwater requirements aren't getting any less stringent, for example. So yeah, it's not probably great practice to put specific dollar amounts in there. It could be, if you guys are in the habit of looking at your fee schedule every year, it could be at your org meeting every year, you basically have that line for the minimum escrow and then the application fee. So it's not a bad you know, kind of durability type.
We could add some language that we've got it, initial deposit $7,500 and so forth, but we could add some language that says as shall be increased by the town board from time to time.
Yeah.
So, something like that.
Yeah.
That's how we do it.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the average cost of one of these projects?
To construct? You know, that's a good question. I'm not on the end of that business. I want to say, you know, depending, you're in the you know, seven figures range, low seven figures is my guess.
So the putting the $7,500 in there generally isn't it's not a cumbersome.
No, and when you think about it over time, I don't know what the rents they charge, but, you know.
So I was just wondering if we used a percentage of the project cost versus putting a flat amount in there, if it would be better versus...
You know, the fees, I guess, you know, my perspective on fees is really, you know, they should cover the cost of the service, right? Or the cost of the burden, or at least recover some of that cost burden to the town. So the escrow is different than the application fee.
Right, yeah.
So the escrow is going to be... You know, I mean, it's going to be like a firm like us. We're going to use what we need, but we're going to return.
You give it back.
Now, as far as the bond for the decommissioning or the abandonment, who sets that figure?
So that is typically the way that works, and I'll look for the provision. It is, you know, an estimate that they provide, reviewed by a third party, us or by we have structural engineers. So the radio frequency equipment is probably, you flip a switch, turn it off, and you take it off the antenna. So it probably doesn't require more than sort of civil structural engineering. Cover the full cost of the removal. Approved by the town board and the town attorney as to form sufficiency and manner of execution. Determined, so it says the cost shall be determined by an estimate of the town designated engineer. So typically they provide the cost, we review it. That's
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I see in here for public notifications we have within 1,000 feet. Is that just because it's a cell tower and it's higher and people can see it from? Because normally it's what, 350 feet? 300 feet?
Yeah, I forgot to mention too on that same, I was going to hit that. There's a balloon test requirement as well. The applicant before the planning board now just flew one. They'll have to fly another one. And there's notice requirements, same notice requirements. Basically, same people get notified twice.
Okay. All right. Teresa, do you got anything to add?
Well, I have some of the issues on some of the other amendments. But on the cell tower law specifically, I think we ought to think about future-proofing it.
Mm-hmm.
Some municipalities, not necessarily here, especially further south in the state, want space on the tower in municipal, EMS, or a school use. Because a lot of these cell towers now are being used to track where different vehicles are.
Mm.
This law currently doesn't state that, but I know Ted and Adam and I have been having conversations on that. So that's something I'd like to think the board should consider to future-proof.
That makes very good sense.
It does make sense, yes.
Other suggestions I would offer, if that's okay. And by the way, I'm Teresa Golden, 43 Court of School Road.
She's Teresa's our chairwoman of the town planning board.
Yeah.
You've got amendments to the battery storage, there's an amendment to the battery storage law that basically said that battery storage facilities should be located within 1,000 feet of residences. I'd like to expand that to also include schools, nursing homes, and hospitals.
I think it's
important that all of those categories.
I think that was those are called out.
They're called out.
Yeah, but let's stick with the cell.
Can we do this later? Because we want to.
Oh, okay.
Is that all right? Because I don't want to. Because we're going to come back to this. I'm going to go through my 1 through 9. I just want to finish up. If that's okay. Sorry.
The cell tower one. I just want to.
Yeah. We're going to add that. We're going to add that.
Anybody in the public have a comment on the cell phone tower law, Mr. Rizzo?
Do we currently have a cell tower law?
No.
We have none.
Right.
Is there a specific reason Has there been complaints? Have there been problems?
There's an application for a cell tower. So that application, we adopted a local law that established a moratorium that's going to give us time to pass a new law, and then these rules will apply to that new application. There's an application for a cell tower at the Fernwood property in Palinville.
There are no cell towers located in the town of Catskill.
There are.
There's one across the street from my house.
Yeah, there are. Two.
And did it go through the planning board, or did they just build it?
It was about 25 years ago, and there was a lot of us that were not happy having it. And I think 1,000 feet, personally, with what emits from a cell tower, possibly, I think it should be further than 1,000 feet, but that's just my opinion.
So and right now there's only one cell tower?
No, there's two.
Sure
the other one was put up 35 years ago.
There's one by the freeway, right?
That's throughway
easy,
owned.
It's Easy Street.
Easy Street.
Off of Easy Street.
Yep.
Pardon me?
It's off of Easy Street.
One on Easy Street?
Yep, off of 5 Mile Woods Road.
Okay. The only concern I think might be a stumbling block would be a visual impact.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if it's in agricultural land, especially if it's near the mountain. As Teresa knows, when we looked at the dollar store in Panelville, that was one of the biggest concerns that the planning board had to overcome, was the visual impact from Artist Rock and from the Catskill Mountain House as to whether or not that is a that visual impact is too great for it to be placed there. So I know there's not much that the board can do other than take a look, or the planning board can do is to take a look at the visual impact that may happen, look at photos, but it could be a burden upon a property owner who may have the opportunity to have a cell tower in a place where it's needed, not that it's just place it there for any other reason. And especially in industrial areas along the Hudson River, if there was one place there, what does a llama have to say about the visual impact? And I'm not sure what DEC requirements may be. I don't know if you have to do either a seeker or a non-seeker on the project. So to me, of the law, that to me seems to be the one that would be the most advantageous for those individuals who hate cell phones, or cell towers, or don't want one, or don't want to see one. So that's only my only comment on the law.
Okay.
Pat? Well, I was going to say the same thing as 1,000 feet. Enough, that's 1,000 feet from residential.
No, that's have to notify.
That's the notification.
People. That's the notification.
For the public hearings.
For the public hearings.
Yeah, just
if they have to notify anyone within 1,000.
Within 1,000 feet, correct.
So what is there a limitation in terms of where it can be placed?
Yeah. I should have mentioned that. So there's minimum 500 feet from existing residences, and then there are setbacks from the property line equal to 2 times the height of the tower, or the underlying zoning district, whichever was greater. And I think there is a provision in here for a waiver if from the residential setback, if they're able to secure written permission from that owner.
And that waiver is granted by?
By the planning board, I believe.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Could I just get confirmation that the proposed cell tower is the one you just mentioned? Potentially about the Fernwood?
Yes.
Okay, and then my other question is there a proposed height for it? Sorry.
I don't know the specifics of that project.
150 feet with 5 foot tower and 10 on top.
150 feet with a 5 foot extension tower.
Okay.
Yes.
That sounds like you would have to clear a lot of space because the Fernwood is on a dead end road. Next to the Catskill Creek, it feels kind of like
This isn't the public hearing on that application. Yep. This is the public hearing on this proposed law. But there will be a public hearing.
Okay.
Probably the applicant is going to be in front of the planning board. If you're interested, you can come to any and all planning board meetings, but the next one is May 27th. The applicant will probably be there, and we'll have a public hearing. Will be set, maybe not that day, but it'll be set. It'll probably be either in June or July. So there is going to be a public hearing. There'll be notice. Notices will be sent out to property owners. There'll be a balloon test, so there's a lot of scrutiny that's going to be placed upon that, based in part on what we're looking at here today.
Right, thanks. I was going to clarify that too. This isn't a public hearing on the Fernwood project, just the law itself. Okay, anybody else on just the law, the cell phone tower law? And then we'll move on to the other ones. Elliot?
Yeah, so I mean, it may not be about the Fernwood, but the law is going to affect that. So it's important that we pay attention to this law, because this law is very important for that project.
Correct.
So back to what Dorn was saying, like suggesting like you said 50 feet or 50 feet from
500 feet from existing residences and twice the height of the tower from property line.
Right. And Dorn said it should be maybe like 1,000, right?
No, I think
like
it
that.
Should be more than that.
Right. So is there a way to work that into law? Why did you put 500 and not 1,000? So I'm curious.
Yeah, so 500 is a starting point. I mean, at the typically, so the regulations need to achieve, if I may,
yeah.
A valid public purpose, right? So as I mentioned before, the law can't, we can't base the law on RF emissions. You know, they demonstrate that they comply with the FCC that has, you know, standards for RF emissions. Typically, the public purpose in these setback requirements are a few. One is, you know, aesthetics. The further you are, the less likely it's going to be obtrusive. And then the potential for the tower, for ice to fall off the tower, for something, you know, to structurally fail with it. So, and that's the reason behind the property line setback. So that's kind of where that comes from. And you know, you start going further, you have to kind of justify it with, you know, say if it's, you have a residential area versus, you know, next to a commercial area, it's allowed in the commercial but not the residential. And the whole idea is about residential character, right? So you can start to justify based on some of those community compatibility aesthetic concepts.
Okay. Anything else on the cell phone?
Just a question to Ted. Can federal law override any portion of this law?
Adam might be able to answer that better, but we can't pass anything that's inconsistent with federal law. So federal law is going to be that's the law, and then whatever we do, there are some areas, the decommissioning plan and you know, there's some areas that we have some ability to legislate, but we can't do anything that's inconsistent with federal law. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I think, and the feds have left, you know, some parts of the regulation for municipalities. They've taken away others, and they've provided a streamlined process, and then a really pretty heavy relief valve at the end, which is direct, you know, appeal to the federal district court, right? And under New York state law too, there are court cases as well, finding that these are, you know, public utilities, so the ability to, which are subject to a lower standard, especially where use variance is required. So there are sort of preferences for these uses, both in the federal and in the state law, that it
makes sense to be cognizant of.
Okay.
The applicant must show public need. It must submit data that shows that this tower is a public need for this tower at that particular point.
Yes.
Yes.
It must give you studies that shows that. Thank you.
Adam, just real quick, did they, because the firm owns both sides of the road up there, and obviously the creek is on one side of the road that they own, did they state exactly the location where they wanted it? Was it on the left side of the road or the right side of the road?
That'd be a planning board issue.
I was just only concerned because of the, you know, possible hazard if, God forbid, something ever had a malfunction, it dropped, and then the creek and everything's right there, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's on the, it's up against the mountain. It's not, it's the mountain side of, it's behind the Fernwood. It's not on
the, I just worry about the road and the creek, God forbid, there was a malfunction and then it caused a hazard to back up the stream and everything else. So that's, you know, that's a concern.
Okay. Yes?
I have one question about something that was said by our planning board chair. I'm sorry, I don't remember specifically, but did I understand correctly that it was a request to put in the law that there must be space held for, like, civic, school, or emergency use? Was that...
Yes.
I think that's fantastic. I just want to say, like, having been through enough disasters in our area, we don't know what the future of emergency services, that as a member of the public, the idea, not that particular tower that y'all are talking about, but just in general, if folks are going to come in here and put in communication systems, the idea that, like, we do where they did old school in the cities where they got cable, so, you know, they got public cable, like, we should have some, our public communication systems, you know, supplied by that infrastructure sounds great, so I really... support that idea.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else on the cell phone tower?
So we're not going to adopt this. Adam might want to, you want to speak to CEQA a little bit, but we're not going to adopt this tonight. We're going to adopt this, presumably you would adopt it at your May 21st meeting.
21st meeting, that's special.
Yeah.
No, we don't have to. We'll do it on the 21st.
Yeah, so this is a type one action under CEQA. Because of the amount of acreage that we're allowing uses in 25 or more areas of the zoning district, we're changing the uses. That typically requires a coordinated review among the involved agencies. There is no other involved agency in a local legislative discretionary act. So you guys are the only involved agency. There's a provision in CEQA regulations, Part 617, that deals with this, that says where there are no other involved agencies, you know, you guys are the involved agency, the lead agency, and there's no need for a coordinated review, which basically means we don't have to wait 30 days to make a decision. So that clock, that sort of procedural hurdle is clear. We still need to, and I think I circulated proposed environmental assessment forms, we still need to go through those prior to enactment or considering enactment of the law, but that's all, you know, that's all procedurally we need to go through for CEQA.
We're still in the public hearing.
Yeah.
I think one other thing, maybe Ted, I think the reason to hold off on the adoption tonight is because there were material changes that are going to require a re-notice, another hearing on the actual red line revised second draft version. Just to...
Okay.
Yeah, that's it for that. We're good, and we will have our CEQA ready to go, our resolutions and so forth on the 21st. We're gonna because we made some changes, we're gonna have a public hearing. I've drafted the notice. I talked to Liz about it. It's gonna go in the paper probably on Saturday. It gives us plenty of time. You'll have a public hearing on the 21st, and then if you want to, you can pass it that night.
Okay.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have a number of, I had 1 through 10 So we just did number one. So we have two through ten. Now, just to provide the context for this, because we had this cell tower application, and because we wanted to adopt the cell tower law, the purpose of amending the code was to adopt the cell tower law. Since we were going ahead and amending the code anyway, we always have a number of potential revisions that are sort of on the back burner, that if we ever get to it and we can go ahead and make these changes. Obviously, the best way to do this is with a comprehensive plan. Comprehensive plan hopefully is coming down the road. But in the meantime, as the planning board does its job and as the building code officer does his job, the zoning board does their job, there are little tweaks. Some of them are typos that we try to fix. Some of them, there's commas that should be over here, it's here, and it should be over here. So there's a number of these things. It's through two through 10. I'd like to go through this. This is gonna be sent to the county for 239 review. This is not gonna be, I'm not gonna ask you to adopt this tonight. These can be adopted. If we are going to adopt all of these or some of these, we can do that in June. What I'd like to do, if the board wants to take the time, some of these will be very, very quick. A couple of them will require some discussion. So we can, as I go through this list, we can sort of, you can indicate to me, yes, that's okay, it's a typo, we're gonna fix that, yes, that's okay. If there's other things that require further discussion, we can have a discussion tonight, you can think about it, we can come back in June, you know, however you wanna do it. So if that sounds okay, I'll start working through this list.
Yep, let's go.
Okay. Battery storage facilities. Add, no large storage facility shall be within 1,000 feet of a school, a nursing home, or any residence. And this was recommended by the planning board. It's pretty self-explanatory, and it's something that we don't have in our current battery storage facility law.
Right.
That's fine. Yeah. Good. Is that good?
Yes. Just the residences.
Right.
I wanted to make sure it's schools and residences.
Yep.
So can I just ask a question?
Yep.
Since we have no mechanism to really know about putting out a fire, God forbid, of a battery storage facility at this point in time, should we make it more than 1,000 feet of a school, nursing home, or residence?
It could be. I mean, that, and that's exactly why we decided that we needed some language like this.
Right, but this is all fine until the state makes it a utility, and then it trumps everything.
But at least we're doing our job, correct?
Yeah.
To try to protect.
I'm gonna do my due diligence. I'm
fine with 1,000 if you want to change it.
2,000?
2,000.
I think
it should be a half mile.
6,000.
Half a mile.
That's a half a mile.
How many square miles is the town of Casco? 89?
A mile is 52.
52.
52,
80.
Whatever.
Right. So 2640.
Shut a whole town in Scotland down. Two fires and one right after the other. So.
Yeah. Half a mile.
Just make it a round number, 3,000.
3,000 feet.
3,000 feet.
Is that too restrictive for the company? Is that feet going to be too restrictive that would cause a lawsuit?
Well, that's a good question, and I had this conversation with Adam. Adam represents, I think he told me, Cooper's Amsterdam and Duanesburg, I think,
and Saratoga and Springs.
You know, and basically, what you're doing here is you're telling them that you can't come in our town. Now, are you going to get sued? Maybe.
No, well, especially since we have approved one in the past.
Right, but you think about the town.
But we
all
did
the,
have a lack of knowledge about the fire issue. Also.
Well, not us.
And it was a small one.
Right.
That was by definition, it was a small.
Right.
facility. It wasn't a large.
But for the nursing homes, Jefferson Heights, yeah, there. But there's no place up there. There's no free land to build a
battery storage facility.
So all those facilities are predominantly here in the village. When you go to the outskirts of the town, there's nothing out there to prevent it.
Maybe the a cement plant down on 9W.
I was just thinking that. I swear that. What about 9W? There you go. That's where they can go.
There's probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Riverkeeper might have an issue with that.
Would fit. Okay.
So, all right, moving on.
All right. Let's see here. There were some typos in large-scale solar energy system. Proposed revision is notice of public hearing shall go to landowners within 1,000 feet of a proposed large-scale solar farm. So when you go down the road and you see the field and the whole thing is solar panels, you would have to give notice to landowners within 1,000 feet.
That's right.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. Are we going off the state's definition of a large scale?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It's a megawatts. I forgot what it is. Okay.
Like going up 9W,
what
they have? Like,
yeah. Yep.
Curb cut. And a curb cut is a sort of a slang word for a road. It's really a road opening permit.
Driveway. Yep.
A road opening permit. Right now, for a new subdivision, you have to have a request for a road opening permit, and that always causes some problems, and we would change that to you need to have a road opening permit, not just have made a request for a road opening permit, which makes a lot of sense, right? Okay, number five. This is for subdivisions and site plan applications and special use permits. Current language requires notice to go to landowners within 300 feet. We have been sending notices only to neighbors.
Yep.
And the law, our law actually requires that it should be 300 feet. So we, with the planning board, is suggesting that you keep it at 300 feet.
I'm fine with that.
And enforce that.
Delete requirement, Green County Soil and Water approved sedimentation and stormwater management plans. The town engineer does that. So that's antiquated language that we can just remove if that's okay. Number seven, allow planning board to approve lot line improvements. Right now, the code officer approves lot line improvements. There's sort of a loophole. If somebody is in front of the planning board for a subdivision, which also includes a lot line improvement, we would rather have the planning board be able to make the lot line improvement rather than have the person also have to go to the code officer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Makes sense.
Great. 100%.
Okay. New definitions for campground, recreational vehicle park, and commercial recreational use. And let's see here. I'm not going to read the whole thing. So campground. A campground or recreational vehicle park, a parcel providing four sites or more for the parking of occupied travel trailers, recreational vehicles which serve as temporary residences for weekend or vacation purposes, the erection of tents or other shelters serving as temporary residences, and all facilities pertaining thereto. So if you have four tents, four RVs, four... What else?
Motorhomes.
That is a campground, and you need to have a permit, and it has to be, and it's in, what is it? Is it in RA?
I have to check.
Let's see. I think it's in RA.
I think it is.
Campgrounds.
Ten now.
Campgrounds are in RA by special use.
Would the other people still... be grandfathered in that had them prior?
Yes, absolutely. People are always grandfathered in. Now, commercial recreational use is kind of an interesting animal, and we didn't have a definition, and it's caused us a little bit of angst from time to time. So I'm not going to read the thing; it's pretty long. But basically, a commercial recreational use. There's internal uses. There's interior, the bowling alleys, fitness centers, outdoors, batting cages, golf courses, and so forth. A commercial recreational use designed and equipped primarily for the conduct of sports and leisure time activities, video parlors, computer game facilities, movie theaters, and bars are not commercial recreational uses. Where some of the interesting things come in, proposed uses come in, is what you want to do with your commercial recreational use as an ancillary use. And of course, people want to have a commercial recreational use and they want to have beer, or they want to have a hot dog stand or whatever. And I always come back to in the old days, if you went bowling, you know, most bowling alleys or all bowling alleys, you could get a beer there. So
still
can. A beer is not necessarily, you know, alcoholic use is not necessarily prohibited, but it has to be ancillary. The word is ancillary. You can't have a bowling alley and the bowling alley closes at 9:30. And the bar at the bowling alley stays open till 3. Mm-hmm. That's not an ancillary use. So that's kind of been interesting.
Can I
say
something? I just think we need to think through, if you've got commercial recreational use in a moderate residential district and they want to serve food and they want to serve alcohol, how do you limit it so that they're coming, people who want to partake, come for the primary purpose of the use, and not all of a sudden, then not just the secondary, so it doesn't turn into a bar or a restaurant. And then we can limit it with hours. Right now the definition doesn't do that, but think about that, because it's, you know, an example right in Palinville, that we suggested that they change the zone so it's, you know, general commercial instead of moderate residential. But that's what I'm worried about, is how do you define that? You know, when does bowling alley start? You know, that's one example. But suppose you have a yoga studio or a business that wants to take people on hikes, and when they come back, wants to serve them alcohol or wants to give them a meal. When does it stop becoming a hiking or sports facility and become a restaurant and bar? The definition doesn't really go that far.
So when they apply for an SLA license, do they put a time when they're going to open and close on that? Is that regulated by the state?
I have no idea.
Because if we say that they can't serve alcohol past 9, but SLA says they can serve till 2 in the morning,
then
how does that work? Right. So I've never applied for a liquor license, so I don't know how that works. Ted, do you know? When they apply for, do you have to give a time frame with SLA?
I don't know.
I think number 8 time frame.
They give you a time frame?
Yeah. Right. I think we could limit it in this in the law. We could say so that you can't, your ancillary use can't be open beyond the hours that the primary use is open.
Okay. But you can't force residents from going there for the ancillary use versus the primary.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden...
Well, it's no different than going to the golf course primary. And just going to the restaurant.
Yeah. So that's the challenge. And do you want to really have a restaurant in a moderate density?
Most of them are.
Right. Right now, commercial recreational use is a special use in every single zone. Mm-hmm. Every zone.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, I just wanted you to think about it, that's all.
Okay.
Because we have some interesting characters.
Sure, thank you.
So does that sound like that's a go, both of those?
Number 8.
Okay. campground.
I want to put number eight on for good. More research.
Yeah. I do more research on
number
commercial
eight.
Recreational use.
Okay.
That's number eight right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So question mark.
Campground's good. Question
campground's
mark.
Good. Okay. All right. And I'll see if I could find some language that's a little bit more restrictive as far as ancillary uses. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not business prohibitive, though.
Agreed.
Right. Right.
I'm thinking of like different things that, just as a family that we've done, where you do something and that's why you're there, but then afterwards there's the ability to have a swim, and that might be part of the business's plan that's mm-hmm. presented, and then that's what they stick to, and that's where people can be, you know, that can be discussed, I would imagine, during the planning board meeting, that this is, you know, okay, so we're going on a hike. So the hikes are generally from 8 a.m. onward until like 2 p.m., then maybe from 2 until 4. They're serving a luncheon with, you know, soda, water, beer, wine, whatever. And then that's that for the day. It's not like I can go there at 10 a.m. and start drinking wine.
Yeah, if they're serving sandwiches or something like that, sounds great. If they're going to serve a sit-down meal, do you want that? When does it become a restaurant? That's the thing I think we need to.
I think it becomes a restaurant when I'm not doing the hike first.
And there's nothing that's stopped, right? So I'm just going to the restaurant. Yeah.
So in other areas, there are things that do. Or so I'll look. Show you some things that I'm thinking of in my brain.
I just think we need to clarify.
Definitely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jared, did you have something?
I'd just like to table that and do some more work on it. So I think that would be the best bet for the town, especially.
Maybe there's a way to address the size of the kitchen is one possibility.
Right. Or the seating capacity.
Seating capacity. Yeah.
Impacts on neighborhood.
Yeah.
Limited
menu. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
New York State, because
they
open until 4 a.m.
Oh, it's 4 a.m.?
Well, yeah, the state law, but municipalities, yeah. Like if you go to Saratoga, the bars close at 2.
Right.
All right, we've got two left. Construction yard, storage yard. So this is a...
revisit?
It's supposed to be RA. I have down HR and MR, which is high residential and moderate residential. That's a typo. That was wrong. The proposal is that it be allowed in RA and moderate residential. Right now, construction yard, construction and storage yard are allowed in highway commercial and industrial by special use, and this proposal would be to allow them in RA and moderate residential by special use.
In addition to, or
in addition to.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm good with
Can
that.
Can I comment?
Go for it.
Okay, this is again, I think we need to really think about what we're doing in our RA zone. If some of your packet, you realize this. Our RA zone is huge. With all the subdivisions and the work in front of the planning board right now, we are turning RA into a patch quilt of all these miscellaneous uses with no thought behind them. We're not doing smart planning. We're not planning for smart growth. We're doing lots of vagrant, whatever anybody wants. I really think for things like this construction yard and some of the other uses in the RA zone, we either need to create other versions of RA that allow more of these non-rural, non-residential uses in specific areas within RA, as opposed to just allowing it everywhere. That's number one. Number two, if you are going to leave it RA the way it is now, and I know we're trying to do a comprehensive plan, but I don't think we've got the funding for it yet. At a minimum, if you're going to allow more than one vehicle on a lot, think about ensuring that vehicle is enclosed or housed, as opposed to just turning it into miscellaneous construction yards. That would be my recommendation. And this is a
personal recommendation, not a planning board recommendation.
Yep.
The planning board didn't like this idea at all, but about adding construction yards to additional zones. But I would say at least you're going to do it, you want it business friendly, but let's try to do it thoughtfully.
Okay. Anybody else on that?
Is it appropriate to comment?
It's a public hearing, go for it.
Okay, I will just speak to that because in Leeds, there was that, you know, small construction company, they worked really hard and nothing against the business. But those trucks, 5 a.m., barreling through Leeds is really just completely changed the character of Main Street in there. I mean, it's besides them, you know, establishing the business, again, no problem with that. But it's just, you know, like every morning, you know, 6 or 7 days a week, and then same thing coming back. So I think Teresa was suggesting that that be a consideration. And just as a resident, it's really a drag having those trucks come through there all the time. Again, nothing wrong with excavators, but it's just really a nightmare. Like the house shakes every time you go through. So I just wanted to put that out there as a consideration.
Okay. Anybody else on the top? For?
I'm for making the modification.
Okay.
Any thinking about inside buildings, or they could just be outside?
They're already outside now. There's 29 illegal construction yards in the town of Catskill.
That's called grandfathered.
Yeah,
so going forward, I mean, we're always talking about going forward, but those are all grandfathered.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all grandfathered.
I'm just saying they exist already.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. All right, so we're good with this. All right. The last one is kind of interesting. They're all interesting. Our language now that we have for special use permit only authorizes one special use permit per parcel. It's actually very poorly written, but that's my interpretation of it. And I just think that is, and the planning board, we talked about this a little bit, that I don't think there was a consensus on the planning board. I think that's very limited, that if you can only have one special use permit per parcel. I just think back, Matt and I were talking about this today, and you know, just as an example, I mean, in the old days, you might have a garage, a repair, a car, you know, selling a gasoline station, and then motel units behind. Now, in our under our current code, you couldn't have that because those are two uses: gas station, motel unit. I don't think there's really anything. I mean, you tell me. I don't think there's any reason why you couldn't have more than one use per parcel.
Case by case? It's kind of hard to do something like that, case by case, unless you...
Well, it's special use, it is case by case, because they're applying for a second special use permit.
You just eliminate that language,
right.
And then if somebody came in, I mean, we from time to time, we have, because of our definition, a motel is different from a resort. A resort is different from a hotel. A hotel is different from a campgrounds. So why couldn't somebody have, if they had a big enough parcel and they were doing it correctly, they could have all three of those, which are related.
Well,
right?
Campgrounds have propane filling stations.
You have a motel unit, you have a campground, and you have whatever. You have a little store, right? A lot of RV campgrounds have little stores. So those are there's three uses. They're compatible.
As long as they go through the proper procedures.
Yeah, so, I don't know what
as
you're
long
doing.
As the use is permitted on the parcel.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, they'd have to go through the planning board process.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, there's an application that wants to be a campground and a motel, but the campground's not permitted.
Right. But if it was.
Yep.
If it was permitted. So we'll just remove that language. It says only one special permit. Okay, that's what I. That's all I have.
You sure?
You have anything else on any of these?
No. All I would just Yeah, I strongly encourage, we need a new comprehensive plan, guys.
Yes.
We need to split RA up into different segments so that we can grow Spartan.
Well, we need different zones.
Agreed.
Which would all be called out in a comprehensive
plan. And if we did that, we wouldn't need as many special use permits.
True.
That would save a lot of time, right?
Okay, any other comment regarding the local laws, changes to zoning? Hearing none, make a motion we close the public hearing.
I make the motion.
Motion by Jared, second by JR. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. All right, now we go into our regular meeting. We have minutes from April 1st and April 16th to be approved. Motion by JR, second. Second by Dawn, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. If anybody wants to leave, I'll wait. No worries. All right. We received some correspondence. We have a request from the town justice to attend the magistrates' conference September 14th through the 17th in Niagara Falls. Green County Resolution 131-25 awarding fuel oil bid. Letter from New York State Department of Service Central Hudson filed an increase in electric gas delivery revenue. Letter from Green County Board of Education. The town has no primary election. I got a notice in the mail the other day that there's a primary election on the 24th.
I did too.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Because we have a letter from Green County Board of Elections that our town is not.
I just got it yesterday, actually.
It's like a post, just like a post where the polling places are, right?
Yeah.
No, it was the 24th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got
it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Continuing business, we are not going to adopt Local Law 3 of 2025. That public hearing is remaining open. New business, summer recreation counselors and new hires. So we received a list. Did I forward that list to everybody?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We received a list from Barb Ersick, who is our head counselor for the upcoming summer rec program. She is requesting that we hire the following employees as Grace McCullough, recreation leader, Lauren Liberti, recreational leader, Nathaniel Timmett, recreation assistant, Alexi Gunther, recreation assistant, Kelsey Lackey, recreation assistant, Alyssa Jackson, recreation assistant, Alexandra Hallam, recreation assistant, Maya Gutzman, recreation assistant, Andrew Holliday, recreation assistant, Sarah Penny, recreation assistant, Abigail Cornielson, recreation assistant, and Casey Minetta, recreation assistant.
I agree with Barbara's recommendations. I make a motion.
Motion second. By Jared, second by Brian. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. These counselors, I think next Saturday, I have to go for mandatory CPR and first aid training for summer rec. We'll get that done. Liz, did we get a recommendation for Mark on cemetery hire?
No, he doesn't have one yet.
He doesn't have one, right?
He's actually, on speaking for that topic, we may need to go look for two. He is not getting very much DSS support, and he has not been heard from the college yet to see if they have anyone.
All right. I know we budgeted for one. We'll have to, if we wanted to hire another one, we have to get with Kirsten and see where we can get the money for.
Yeah, because he's falling with the way they're falling behind with the lack of additional resources.
Okay. All right. Next on the agenda is a CDBG Community Development Block Grant for cement. And about 2 years ago, the town applied for an engineering study grant for the cement and sewer plant. We were awarded that. The engineering process and CCTV and smoke testing was done last summer. We found some minor discrepancies in the pipes. The sewer plant down there needs some upgrade. So now we're going to apply for a community development block grant for down there. This, I believe, the one that we're applying for is 100% funded, meaning that the residents down in cement won't have to pay for anything.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. But we do have a list of steps that we have to do at May 6th board. We need a resolution authorizing a public hearing to be held on June 3rd.
I'll make a motion that we schedule a public hearing for the CDBG grant for sewer on the 3rd of June.
Motion by Jared.
Second.
Second by Dawn. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. We need a motion authorizing request for qualification for engineering services for the CDBG grant cement and sewer.
I make the motion.
Motion by Jared.
Second.
Second by Dawn. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. I'll have to put a legal ad in the paper for engineering services RFQ, proof of publication. That's Liz. If we get an ad in the paper.
Those are the only two you need to do.
Yep. The ambulance drug testing. So next on the agenda is the ambulance drug testing policy, which has not been updated since 2010. It's a little out of date. Ronnie Travers, who's our HR representative, will charge us $750 to update it. It's an extensive document for her to update. And she's also recommending that we stop testing for cannabis for non-DOT employees.
But that was her suggestion.
No.
Oh.
We did not do that. So do I have a motion to approve Ronnie to update?
I make the motion.
Motion by Jared, second by JR. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Now, in the event of an accident, though, they'll be tested, right?
They'll be tested for alcohol.
Not cannabis.
Not cannabis. That's federal regulated.
Oh, because both are driving impaired.
Yep. What else do we have? Yep, the surplus. A couple meetings ago, we declared a bunch of old cemetery equipment surplus that was listed on Auctions International. We got the results yesterday in the tune of $11,470, so I need a motion to approve that.
Motion.
Motion by Dawn, second by JR. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. We need to set a public hearing for May 21st for the cell tower local law. Got a motion?
Motion.
Motion by Dawn, second by Brian. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Liz, do we have to do anything with the Central Hudson escrow account?
Yes.
They're here tonight.
Yeah, so I'm here, Dan Oliver, Central Hudson Facilities Department. Just to give you a summary of the project, we're looking to put solar panels on our Catskill headquarters on 9W there. And going through the planning board, it was determined that there was some sort of escrow that was required for the decommissioning plan. And talking about it with them, it's kind of advised to come here and talk to you since you guys would be setting this, it's either a dollar amount or whatever we can provide, you know, as a letter from us good enough that, you know, we will take care of these systems or, you know, considering there is a...
Can I speak to that?
Just a quick question. Yeah. Is it roof mounted or...?
Yes, it's roof mounted.
Yeah. So two things. Number one of the things we're going to do in our... solar panel law is roof-mounted facilities in the future are not going to have to be approved by the planning board.
Thank you.
Which I hope that that's...
Yeah.
And with this project specifically, the board's recommendation, the planning board's recommendation is that there be no escrow because they're a public utility. It's a roof-mounted system. They're a public utility, and they... ordinarily if there was a private person, they would have to establish some kind of a security to decommission their solar system.
There is a need for any residential roof mount.
I'm sorry?
There is no need for a decommissioning on a residential roof.
There isn't.
No. So I don't see why we would charge a office a decommissioning on a roof mount.
Right. That was the planning board's recommendation. That would be my recommendation. That because of their, you know, they're a public utility, and
it's my belief too that we shouldn't. It's not just because it's because any roof mounted solar, it wouldn't make sense because if I had a 4,500 square foot house, it may have a larger roof mounted solar system than their office.
Right.
So why would
So you would need, because the law requires the town board to set the amount of escrow, you would have to by resolution, by motion, you would have to set them.
Make a motion that we charge zero in the escrow for roof-mounted solar for Central Hudson.
Motion by Jared.
Second.
Second by Dawn. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Thank you for coming. I believe that is... Yep. Can I have a motion to allow the magistrates to go to the conference September 14th to the 17th in Niagara Falls? Motion by JR, second by Dawn. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Where's that one for fuel oil?
That was the county.
All
the way down. Was it the county there?
Yeah. But that's it.
Number 11.
Yep. Liz, do we need a motion to accept or to write off the county bid for fuel oil? We do that at our reorganization.
No,
we
do it at the exact.
Yeah.
We accept all county
bids. Yep. All right. And that's all I have on my list. Does the board have anything?
Oh, yes, I wanted to just bring up, we have to discuss putting up some mafia blocks at Ricky Kramer.
Okay.
They're parking way too close to the playground. And
we need to move that dumpster, too.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want me to get a price.
They're $120.
Well, except someone suggested getting the domed ones so people can't climb on them.
It's a cap, and the cap is 50.
Okay.
So $170 a pop.
All right, so I'll go with Mark and we'll
measure them out.
Measure out how many we're going to need.
I think there's six by three. 6 foot by three?
I think 3 foot, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll get with Mark on Thursday as long as it's not a deluge.
Nah, it's not going to rain. It doesn't rain in Catskill.
But we do have to move a dumpster too, and we have to, one of them is going to have to protect that pump station.
I'd like to get that moved to the telephone pole and mount it to the building.
It's just not safe.
No. I'm surprised nobody's taken that out yet.
It is cracked.
JR and I have been going back and forth with DOT about the pocket park up in Palinville. Turns out we will have to fill out a DOT road permit, I think it's called. So we'll start working on that at the end of this week, beginning of next week.
We may need your assistance to on that. So they also want like a description of what we want in there and things like that.
So we had a good conclusion to the dog control application with the town of Carroll.
Yep.
Yeah, they signed that.
They signed off on it,
yeah. We've yet to receive a proposal from the village.
Yeah, we haven't received it.
In their verbiage, though, it shows village of Catskill, so I don't know if that needs to be corrected on their end, but just so you know.
It did?
Yeah, not on our end. In their wording on their
resolution.
The resolution. Yeah, that's got to be changed. Yeah. Liz, can we send a letter to the village, speaking of them, to start negotiation for fire protection?
Yes.
Dawn, Brian, anything?
Have you heard anything? I haven't heard anything about ambulance negotiations.
Countywide?
No.
Or
as far as our union?
No. I reached out to the union rep last week, and he said he received everything that was required by the town, and he'll get back to me. I haven't received. I haven't heard anything from Highway. Nope. Okay. Public comment.
What's up with the Hampton Inn? Do you know anything about that? What's taking?
So right now, that's held up due to the CSO issue in the village. So until DEC and the village work that out, the hotel can't go up.
And that also includes the project behind Price Chopper for 75 houses.
Any new construction totaling over 2,500 gallons of wastewater a day cannot hook up. So, yes. Joe?
I have two things. Ted, while you were talking about the code, there was something about notifying the property owners within 300 feet of the project, and it brought to mind when we were looking at the gun range out in the old game farm, that there was some discussion because of the rural nature of where it was, that when we notified somebody within 300 feet, that was only one family. Mm-hmm. And there was some consideration about extending that 300 feet to 500 feet because of the rural nature of where some projects are within the town. And I wasn't sure if that 300 feet that you were talking about was exclusive to some changes, or is it just a general 300 feet? But my personal opinion is, based on all the things we went through with that project, that at least 500 feet would be reasonable, would be more than reasonable to pick up those individuals who, because of the rural nature of where you are, you'd be able to notify.
Yeah, I think that that's really something that we should address in the when we get to the comprehensive plan. That's the type of thing that, rather than, I mean, this is, these are all important. Every single one of them was important, but they were all, they were things that came up in front of the planning board, and they're kind of quirky things that we have to, you know, we're trying to deal with. And
because it's only by zone.
I'm sorry?
It, obviously, in a MR zone or an HR zone, 300 feet touches plenty.
Yeah.
But say in an RA zone, you may have to notify 500 feet.
But that's,
which we can do with the comprehensive.
That sort of grand thing really should, we should go in, that should be come out of the comprehensive plan.
Thank you. And in regards to the hotel out by Stewart's, when I was at the, I think I was the only crowd of two that was at the village appropriations meeting, I did ask a question concerning the hotel, and of course, I got a lot of no answers. But one was, we're working on it, and I guess there's some issue with DEC granting credits, quote, credits, to allow some sort of hookup. So I wasn't, I'm not sure whether the town is aware of what discussions are going on between the village and DEC or county and DEC, but my understanding that it seemed to be that they were working for, quote, credits, whatever credits mean, with that project. That's just to fill you in. And the other issue was, I listened to the ambulance study report, a whole hour and whatever. Couldn't get any firm answers, but it seems to be that there's still no decision on what the consensus is. With the project, have you any update on that?
I don't think we're remotely close to coming up with a decision. We don't know what this entity is going to look like. We don't know how it's going to be managed. We don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know the employee status.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where the stations are going to be. We don't know what's going to happen with current municipal assets. There's so many unknowns that on behalf of the town of Casco, I'm not ready to make a decision whether we're for it or against it yet.
That's it. I kept you long enough. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. First of all, we said that we're keeping the public hearing open for the good cause eviction. What does that mean? Does that mean it's next month, or does that mean that it's on the second?
Our next meeting, so the 21st.
The 21st, okay.
2 weeks.
All right, perfect. And then my other question is, this letter that was from the Department of Public Service, Central Hudson filed for an increase of an electric and gas delivery revenue. What is that about?
That was just a notification that they were filing for it.
That they're filing for
it? Yep, it was just a mandatory letter that they had to send out to local municipalities.
Okay.
That's all.
And yet, Jared, you were very adamant about not charging them for putting the solar panels.
Not charging them, but decommissioning the plant.
I'm sorry?
Not charging the escrow for decommissioning.
The decommission, okay. That's what I was trying to understand. Thank you so much.
Yes?
First of all, thank you. This is just
the public service and the work that I can see that you're doing to steward, like to think about how we take businesses into our community responsibly. So that was really interesting that followed the good cause conversation, because everything you're doing around these other things is in that same spirit of like that. And so in that spirit, I really was struck by this concern that some people who feel like they might not be able to make enough money and we have these protections will just Airbnb it. And you guys have heard me mention this before because this is something I'm concerned about. I'm wondering, I don't know if the board is looking into this question as well, so that we don't, you know, just I'm sure you do in other kinds of regulation where you say, we can't just do it here because they'll just go over here. If the board is thinking about that, and if there would be anything, because I know you all are incredibly busy, that a volunteer or community member could do in terms of research or anything that could be pulled together, if you all are thinking about kind of some of the housing stuff collectively in terms of how it affects one affects on the other, if that's on the table.
My opinion, everything's on the table.
Yeah.
Is that something, or would it be welcome, would it be helpful to like just pull together like an email you guys and find out about how to follow up?
Anyone's welcome to email or send us research.
That would be great. So it would be great to kind of not have that one concern prevent us from doing something that will help, however few people it helps, and have us have this again, just be like a profit center for
facts-based decision is what I've always been told.
So that's the kind of stuff that would be useful. Facts, examples from other places that make these things not happen.
My biggest fear is because it's so easy to fill your Airbnbs in this community that we would lose what precious inventory we have.
But it doesn't have to be, I guess, is the point. Maybe it doesn't have to be that easy.
We have an Airbnb regulation. You have to register it and pay your permit, but we can't tell people they can't have an Airbnb.
Really?
Well,
yeah. I don't know what all the different options are, but I just know that, like, in the spirit of, like, we don't want a cell phone tower in the middle of our favorite place, or in the spirit of these other things, I think there's something about, like, and I'm just really sad because I'm literally, like, my neighborhood is emptying out, and it's a different part of
The town I grew up in, I grew up in Cement. I go down there to visit my grandmother now, and there's no one left.
I've stayed in Texas. It's not about, again, just the spirit. It's not about being anti-anything. It's about this idea of, like, what does it mean to collectively have a community? So adding that in so that it doesn't become a reason we even know ourselves. Thank you, guys.
I do see a thing where you're okay with putting a regulation on one thing, but not another. And I understand that there has to be like a fact-based decision on it. But people are being affected by this. But either way, we get more facts and bring that to you. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Everybody good?
Motion
to adjourn by Jared, second?
Second.
Second by JR, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.